I can't do it. We'll do it live.
Okay.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
This is Snowman in the Morning, and it begins now.
What?
Damn, damn, damn!
Hi, howdy, hello, how are you? How do you do? How are you doing? How's it going? What's going on? What's new? What do you think? What do you hear? What do you say? What do you feel? What's shaking? What's happening? K-Pasa, what's going down? What it is?
Next! Good morning! It's Friday. I'm going to be running around like crazy, but I thought I'd get this episode out to y'all because there's a very special interview that I'm going to conduct after the break. It's with a fellow by the name of Jordan Drake and his father Earl. Now, a little background on Jordan Drake. He is related to a catcher by the name of Charles Johnson, who won a world championship with the Florida Marlins. Now, what separates Jordan Drake from everybody else? He's a catcher and he is black. You don't see black catchers in Major League Baseball that much anymore, but we're going to get all the way into that. I just thought I'd come here really quick, let you guys know what's going on. So after the break, you'll hear my entire interview, well, part one thereof, with Jordan Drake, and then you'll also hear my college football conversation I had with Chris Dietz. I'm not even doing NFL picks this week. I'm just going to run those two segments for you, and I'm getting the heck out of here because I got a little running around to do. After the break, Jordan Drake, Snowman in the Morning, back in a flash.
Hey folks, it may be winter, but you should never stop trying to get and be in the best shape of your life. To do that, reach for the supplements that will help you along the way. Cleaver Supplements. From our super fat burner, the Swole Serum for your workouts, and much more. Cleaver Supplements is the secret weapon to getting you in shape for a great 2018. So let's get you started today on the fastest track to a healthier you. Log on to cleaversupplements.com or call 580-478-5517. Mention Arena Sports and you'll get 10% off your first order. Cleaver Supplements, pure supplements for when genetics are not enough.
Welcome to the Butcher Box. Our beef is exactly the way that nature intended. 100% grass-fed and grass-finished, antibiotic and hormone-free, and never taken from feedlots. Just 100% healthy meat. We offer 2 to 5 day delivery to the contiguous 48 states. The meat is flash frozen at the peak of freshness, packed with dry ice, and shipped directly to your door. The beef is sourced from a collection of small grass-fed farms. It is of the utmost quality and tastes incredible. Our steak won a blind taste test cook-off with the Today Show in 2015. So for 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, organic chicken, and heritage bred pork delivered for free on your schedule for less than $6 per meal, visit arenasportsnet.com and click on the Butcher Box logo, and if you do so, you will receive 10% off your first order, or give Butcher Box a call at 855-981-8568.
This is Snowman in the Morning, where true sports talk lives.
Hello, baby.
Every so often, I am handed an opportunity to talk to somebody that was on the precipice of greatness, but got thwarted in an unfair fashion. Ladies and gentlemen, I have that opportunity right now. I met these two while I was down in Milton, Tennessee, covering baseball for a new league that is set to premiere in the spring. But when I talked to them and heard their story, and they came to me and they said, Snowman, and I said, what up? They said, we got a story for you, and you need to be the one to break it. Here it is. On the hotline with me right now are two gentlemen, one of which is trying his best to make his Major League Baseball dream happen, and the other's the proud papa of said Major Leaguer. I want y'all to help me welcome Jordan Drake and his father, Earl Drake. They are both on the line with me right now because we're going to break something that's never been broken on Snowman in the Morning. How are you, gentlemen?
Well, hey, fine, Mr. Snowman. Thank you for having us.
JD,
hey,
how are
going,
you?
Snowman?
Snowman's doing,
I'm doing
good.
Good, man.
All right, let's get into it. JD, you had a shot and was in the Major League Baseball system. But as you guys told me, and we talked the entire time that we were in Tennessee, that came to a sudden, screeching halt. And I am not sure why you were, for lack of a better term, exiled from reaching your dream in the majors. I want you to tell me your story.
Okay, Snowman. So, you know, just from the little bit of what you know about me and the people don't really know, I was drafted in 2009 by the Los Angeles Angels in the 23rd round, and I was the 7th and 11th pick in the 2009 amateur draft. I was drafted out of high school. I was cut 2 years in a row, my junior and my senior year of high school. So, you know, adversity and having people telling me something I can't do, I'm used to it.
That makes,
you know,
two
after
of us.
I got drafted, I was, excuse me?
That makes two of us.
Right. You know, and after getting drafted, you know, playing in the Angels organization, it was great. It was cool. I got to learn a lot from the game. I had some great peers that I got to meet and learn from. But, you know, with the game of baseball, you're hired to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
And my time was sooner than later. And I was cut in 2010 by the team out of spring training. To this day, I really don't know why or how it happened. But that's really what we're trying to get to the bottom of and trying to figure out today. And this is what I'm trying to bring to light for other players like myself in my situation. Because if I'm going through it, someone else is going through it.
And you know something? When we met and we talked, okay, and I looked up some articles. I did my research, as your father implored me to do, and my late father kept imploring me to do. Do your research. Now, I have pulled up names such as Elston Howard, Roy Campanella,
yes, sir,
Cliff Johnson,
mm-hmm,
Elrod Hendricks, and John Roseborough. Now, what do those names have in common? For those of you just tuning us in this morning, yeah, they're all catchers. Here's the twist. They're all black catchers, which identifies Jordan Drake. You want to talk about a rarity at a position that is needed. Let me come to your dad, Earl, because Earl and I talked extensively about this. Earl,
mm-hmm,
you want to talk about,
yes, sir,
a position that is needed in Major League Baseball, mm-hmm, and the lack of black catchers that have seen their way through MLB. And your son is sitting on this story. Well, not anymore, because we're putting it out there. A, how right. rare is it, especially with the people that he met? And B, why do you think his time ended entirely too soon?
Well, Mr. Snowman, I think you said a mouthful with that. First of all, as far as, you know, MLB has an issue with African-American catchers. That's a fact. Okay?
And it's been proven.
Go ahead.
And it's been proven.
Yes. The last African-American. We're not talking about Canadian-born. We're not talking about another player born from another country. We're talking about an African-American, a black ball player. Okay, the last African-American ball player that was born here in America was Charles Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Charles Johnson was the first African American, was the first player that the Florida Marlins ever drafted.
Yep.
That's first of all. Okay. He went on to have an illustrious career, one of the best defensive catchers in all of baseball. You know, he wasn't the greatest hitter, but he was the best, one of the best defensive catchers MLB has ever seen. And since he retired in 2005, we really haven't seen an African-American catcher since.
No.
Okay. Now, let me clarify something real quick.
All right.
There are, there's an African-American catcher in MLB. He plays for the Toronto Blue Jays. His name is Russell Martin.
Russell Martin.
Okay. And there's another African-American catcher that recently came up to the bigs in 2012. What's his name again?
Bruce Maxwell.
Bruce Maxwell.
Yeah, Bruce Maxwell. Okay. Now, Bruce, Mr. Russell Martin, he's an African-American, but he was born, he's a Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now let's get to the real meat of this thing, okay? In my opinion, and I've had quite a long time to really look at this thing for what it is, okay? It's like a whitening or a lightning effect that's taking place in baseball,
mm-hmm.
okay? If you go back into the 1800s, the 1880s, excuse me, when baseball first became a professional sport, there was a rule that's unwritten. It's called the gentleman's agreement. And that agreement basically says, in a nutshell, that no African American or no black man is to play professional baseball.
Wow.
That's an unwritten rule. You can look that up, gentleman's agreement in baseball, and it will tell you just that. So when we look at Jackie Robinson and what he accomplished with in 1947, breaking the color barrier, that's great that he was able to achieve that. But what people fail to realize is Jackie Robinson wasn't the best player in the Negro League.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There were other players such as Satchel Paige, Josh
yep.
Gibson.
And Josh Gibson never saw a minute. And here's what I found in my research, which is incredible. Josh Gibson, who is regarded as one of, if not the best catcher in baseball history, never played a minute of Major League Baseball.
Right.
Not a pitch.
Mr. Satchel Paige was 56 years old when he won his first Rookie of the Year in the Major Leagues.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. People fail to realize that, too. So with the game of baseball being, you know, like how my father is saying, how they have the gentleman's agreement, just think about all the great ball players who should have been in the Hall of Fame for Major League Baseball but never got the chance to play Major League Baseball.
Josh Gibson.
And another thing I want to add to you, Snowman, is it's weird to me how when they were doing the Major League and the Negro League exhibition games,
mm-hmm.
that the Negro Leagues were coming back to beat the Major League teams.
Yeah.
And it's weird how they stopped segregation. They started doing the segregation of baseball around that time when the Negro Leagues were beating the MLB. So now you end that exhibition game and you bring in Mr. Jackie Robinson to break the color barrier.
Right. Right.
Here's
so
another.
That's basically where that's where it starts. I mean, let's go back to 1947.
Exactly.
Because prior to that, African Americans, we basically had no face in the game of baseball.
None.
So here we are. We just celebrated the 70th year anniversary of Mr. Robinson breaking the color barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And the game, if you look at the game right now, there's a very small representation of African Americans playing this game.
Very small.
You know, and that's a huge, huge problem. And to turn around and say that, oh, it's the lack of because parents in the African American community can't afford the gloves, the bats, and and all the things that it takes, you know, for your kid to go out and to play this game. Well, I tend to differ with that. You know, I had two sons that played this sport, you know, and both of them were catchers. So,
position.
It is.
That the finances, it all depends on what the household is or, you know, but I really truly believe that if we were able, we can make a change in this situation. This whole thing can be changed. It's just that Major League Baseball has to step out of itself and stop, you know, sugarcoating everything and address these issues for the way they are.
JD,
you know, it's sad that you go to, and let me say this real quick. Back in the 80s, and hopefully this can give your audience a little clarity, okay?
Okay.
Back in the 80s, when we talk about Daryl Strawberry.
Yes.
And I'm used two names because, you know, they had a history, so to speak. They were inner city kids coming out of the inner city. Mm-hmm. I think my guy was in Florida. He was from Florida, and Daryl Strawberry was from Los Angeles.
From Los Angeles.
You know? Yes. So these are inner city kids. They're first round babies in the 80s.
Yep.
Okay. Major League Baseball says, okay, we're going to, the teams that drafted them, okay, we drafted them first round, second round, or whatever. So they're bonus babies. So you're giving these guys all of this money, signing bonus this and that, and, you know, they necessarily didn't have the right people around them, so to speak, to help them, you know, to this at this next level.
Manage their money.
Yeah, how to manage their money and things of that sort. And then you add into the nightlife.
Yes.
After the games are over. So you started getting out, interacting in the clubs, the bars, or whatever, and everything that goes with that. So, and then, you know, back in the 80s, MLB was basically, you know, a drug-infested league.
Yep.
You know, the whole cocaine era type of thing. So, so what they said was, okay, I'm only using these two figures just to prove my point.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They say, well, we're no longer, now that they saw how their careers kind of, you know, they had a high and then they hit the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So Major League Baseball says, okay, we're no longer going to draft or go looking in the inner cities. We're going to send our scouts to the foreign countries like the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and places like that, where we can go down there and we can scout players when they're 12 and 13 years old, draft them or whatever, keep them in a system, and then we'll bring them to the States after 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
We'll lie about their birth certificates and their ages, and they will be the face of black people for the game of baseball. And that's what happened.
It
so they
exactly
spent the last 25 or 30 years putting their money and resources in foreign countries versus turning around and putting that money here in the inner cities of the United States of America.
Where the game was made.
Yeah, the game is supposed to be America's pastime, correct?
But it hasn't been
for a while. Yes, so why is it that we are being excluded from this game?
I'll give you another example.
Go ahead, sir.
I'll give you another example of someone that was drafted out of high school, and I believe should still be playing. And he was a World Series MVP. Does anybody remember a fellow by the name of Jermaine Dye?
Yep, sure do.
Jermaine Dye.
Jermaine Dye was the 2005 World Series MVP when he played with the Chicago White Sox. After three more years, he got exiled.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about a popularity decreasing, and people who know me knows the first sport I ever fell in love with was baseball because of fellows like Doc Gooden. Because of fellows like Daryl Strawberry, because of fellows, and this is one of Jordan's favorite players, and I think both of y'all know this name. I believe his name to be Ken Griffey Jr.
Without question.
Thank you. The kid.
And I'll give you a couple. I'll give you a couple more. One of my favorite sluggers of all time, played 16 years on the South Side, Mr. Frank Thomas.
Big Hurt.
Big Hurt.
The impact that black baseball players have had on Major League Baseball has been diminished. That's all I can say. Yeah, you can give them a spot in the Hall of Fame, but do they really outline their entire careers? Because remember, Thomas hit over 500 home runs.
Right.
After he left Chicago.
Forget about that.
Yeah. Yeah, he hit his 500th while I believe he was with the Toronto Blue Jays, and he hit it in Minnesota.
Yep.
So while we're talking about baseball players being exiled and excluded, as Earl said best, how about we touch the point with managers? And the first black manager that I remember that had two shots with the same team, won two World Series with them. Y'all remember this name? Cito Gaston.
Yes, sir. Toronto.
He took them to two World Championships. 3 years later, he was gone.
And you know what? You know what's so sad?
See what they did to Dusty Baker.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Yeah. They gave him the old hee-ho. You know? And what's so crazy, Snowman, is that, you know, this game means a lot to Jordan and to myself.
And to me.
I didn't play baseball. But I made sure that my sons had the proper tools and the proper training.
Yep.
And, you know, to excel in this sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when Jordan mentioned that he had gotten cut from his high school team, that was the first time. Well, that wasn't the first time, but the politics of being black.
Yep.
And playing a sport that's dominated by predominantly Caucasian kids or, you know, other white kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was never a time from the time Jordan and his younger brothers started playing baseball, they were always the only two African-American kids. We can play in a tournament of 30 teams.
Yep.
Okay? They were always the only two black kids in the whole tournament. Am I right, Jordan?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Let me pose a question to Jordan. Because JD, you and I have had ample time to get to know each other and to talk to each other. When you were in 2010, did it seem to you like the support and the chances just suddenly stopped? Your connection to the major leagues, did it seem like it just suddenly froze? And you
were
pushed out.
And the reason why. I felt like this, okay? Snowman, people don't really know. I was drafted as a left fielder by the Los Angeles Angels.
But that wasn't your position.
As we're talking about... Go ahead.
But that wasn't your position.
Exactly. My position was catcher, okay? So, once I got released and I got cut from the Angels, I felt like my career was over. For sure, because I never got the full chance to excel or put all my effort into the real position that I tried playing when I was 6 years old. I felt that they cut me because I didn't do what they wanted me to do. They didn't even give me a chance to play the real position that I was being groomed at doing, or that Charles himself taught me how to play.
See, that's another thing. Let's put this out there too, Jordan. We reference Charles Johnson because Charles Johnson is a cousin of ours. Okay? And before Charles Johnson, there was another cousin who played Major League Baseball, and he was a catcher too. His name is Terrance McGriff. We call him T-Mac.
McGriff.
He was drafted in the eighth round, I think it was, by the Cincinnati Reds in I think 1980-81, to replace Johnny Bench. Okay? And then prior to him, his father, Roy McGriff, Sr., played in the Negro Leagues, and he was a catcher. Okay? So a catcher, the mentality, the mind, the genetics, is here. Mm-hmm. It's in Jordan's bloodline. Okay? So why is it that if you got a history, I mean, you look at the other family members that has been involved in the game. Got the Molinas. That's three generations of catchers right there.
How about this last name? Alomar.
Yeah.
Alomar.
Yes.
Ripkins.
Yes.
Ripkins. Griffey.
Yes. Yes.
Griffey's.
Yes.
Bandos. There's,
Bando.
I can go. The Seegers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The Sweeneys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I can go on for days, man. Anyways, keep going.
And you mentioned you mentioned Seeger. One in Seattle, one in Los Angeles.
Right.
Yeah.
You just gave me another great name. McGriff. The crime dog.
McGriff.
Fred McGriff.
Yes. And Fred McGriff is a distant cousin to our cousin Terry McGriff.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean it's
my thing is this. Hold on. My thing is this. For all the family members that we have named in the game of baseball, they're all letting them have passes. They're all letting them have slides.
Yeah, they are.
The cousin of so-and-so, the nephew of this person, the grandson of XYZ. My thing is this. I'm not looking for a handout.
I'm not
looking for a pat on the back to go in and play the game of baseball. Only thing I'm looking for is a fair shot at the actual position that I was meant to play and to represent people who look like me, because there isn't anybody that looks like me playing the position or playing the game.
You know, Earl, you mentioned...
And the ones that are playing... Go ahead.
Finish, Jordan. Go ahead and finish, Jordan.
No. And the ones that are playing the game... I'm just going to be real, and if they have a problem with me saying this, so be it, but they're selling out.
I'm not even
Every single one of them is selling out, because what are they doing to get people like me or other people like us onto the field? Nothing. They're thinking about themselves. They're already there. They're happy. They have their millions of dollars.
Right.
Okay?
Take
all that away from them?
Yep.
They have nothing.
Not a thing. And you know something?
Okay.
The last name McGriff was mentioned. All right. Here are the bloodlines, and Earl already said this. I'm talking with Earl Drake and his son Jordan Drake, who is going to be back in the majors. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. They're joining me on the hotline this morning. Terry McGriff was drafted in 87. His major league debut. His major league debut was July 11th of 87. I got that wrong. My mistake.
Right.
He played for the Cincinnati Reds from 87 to 90, then split time with the Astros, Marlins in 93, and the St. Louis Cardinals in the strike-shortened year of 1994. Terry is the cousin of Fred, as Earl mentioned, and the uncle of one, what's his name? Charles Johnson.
Right. And what's so crazy with that, Charles Johnson Sr., which is Charles Jr.'s dad,
mm-hmm.
he was the coach at Westwood High School in Fort Pierce, Florida.
Yeah.
And at that time, he coached Terry McGriff while he was in high school. Okay. And then Charles came along, and he coached Charles.
Yep.
Okay. And now both of those guys... They're World Series champions.
Mm-hmm.
McGriff just got his. He just got his World Series ring with the Cincinnati Reds. I think it was two years ago.
Yep.
Yeah. So my thing is this: we understand the fact, like I raised both my sons on the fact that in any job, you're hired to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
And in baseball, you're going to fail more than you succeed.
True.
Okay, we knew that going in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So my thing is this. I feel like Major League Baseball has been very hypocritical. Okay? And when I say that, that's because they have all of these initiatives that they're trying to put in place with the RBI program and this and that and all of this and that. But every year, I'm sure, since Jordan was drafted in 2009,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's been a trickle or a sprinkle of African-American players being drafted.
Yeah.
Okay. How many of those players actually stick? How many of those players go through the minor league system from bottom to the top, from single A to triple A? Very few. It's almost like saying, okay, we're going to draft you for the sake of looking, for the sake of stats and numbers. Yeah, we're going to draft you, but we're going to cut you.
That's just like how they do it in the workplace for those minority incentives. You got to have XYZ amount of blacks or Mexicans working
yep.
at your place.
Yep.
That's exactly what Major League Baseball is doing. If it's less than 6%,
right.
There's less than 6% black people playing the game of baseball. There's more Chinese people, Oriental people playing the game of baseball more than there are African Americans.
And teams have to pay a fee to even talk to them.
To get them.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
They have to pay a fee to talk to these Japanese and Chinese players. Let's just go ahead and call Major League Baseball out for its hypocrisy. I love watching baseball, but we got to stay truthful as well. That's what we do here on Snowman in the Morning. The one player that identified what Jordan just said for me about having more Oriental players in Major League Baseball, anybody remember a fellow by the name of Hideo Nomo?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And who came behind him? Ichiro.
Ichiro. Hideki Matsui.
Hideki Matsui. Kurt Suzuki.
Right.
You know, the White Sox had a player.
You know what? Yeah, hey, check this out, Snowman. So how about when Jordan was like 10 years old? How old were you, Jordan? 10, 12? And we go to I think we just lost Jordan. We go to this, one second. Yeah, we go to this, at this time, Kurt Suzuki was a catcher at Cal State Fullerton.
Mm-hmm.
And I take Jordan over there for a camp with the coach. And so Kurt Suzuki got a chance to work with Jordan a little bit. So my point to this, Snowman, is that everybody in Southern California knew that this kid was a catcher.
Right.
And he was good.
Right.
Okay? And I'm not saying this because he's my son. I'm saying it because I've witnessed his play myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat in the stands with different scouts and college scouts. Everybody was wondering, who is this kid? He's lights out. You know? So all of that is great. But at the end of the day, my son is still unemployed.
At the end of the day, where's his opportunity?
The pink elephant in the room right now is from 2010 till now.
Yep.
He's been unemployed. Okay?
The pink elephant. The pink elephant in the room. Where's his opportunity? Period.
Right.
If all these scouts are looking at Jordan and they're wondering who he is, he gets drafted by the Angels and has been unemployed for 7 years because he got cut. Did he do something wrong? Okay? Well,
right.
According to Jordan, and I believe this to be true, they drafted him as a left fielder, but he didn't want to play left field. He wanted to play his natural position, which is catcher. That's crazy. That's like drafting, let me throw a name out there. Okay, one of my favorite pitchers of all time is the great Nolan Ryan. That's like drafting Nolan Ryan to play first base.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Good point.
That's like.
Good point.
Let me throw another one out there. Well, since we're talking about pitchers, and we listen, folks. If I'd have done the show down in Tennessee, we'd have been talking baseball for about 4 hours right now. But we only got two to work. We only got two to work with, and we're halfway through one. That would be like asking Nolan Ryan, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, to play first base. That would be like asking Bob. Let me go there. That would be asking Bob Gibson to switch with Tim McCarver.
Right.
How do you like them apples? That would be asking one of my favorite left-handed pitchers of all time, Steve Carlton, to. I touched
it. Go play left field. It doesn't make sense, man.
Well,
the
point I'm hammering home
and
is
we have to bring it to life.
We have to.
And then let's touch on this, no man. Let's touch on this. Let's call a spade a spade. Okay.
Go away. Right.
Now there are very few African American in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very few. Okay. And the one guy who was in baseball at that time, and I'm not going to call his name, I'll let your listening audience do their research, but the guy that was in office at that time told us that Jordan didn't need to have an agent because he was only signing a minor league contract. Okay?
What's wrong with that? I'm sure.
And the other thing to that is, looking back on that, you know, and we took the man's word type of a thing, but at the same time, against my own better judgment as a father, my father always told me, you're doing something on a level like that, of course you need some type of representation.
Yep.
But, you know, we knew of this guy that was the GM. He's known our family since Jordan was born, even before Jordan was born. Okay. There's pictures of him at family gatherings, at some of our family gatherings, and Jordan is crawling under the floor underneath the guy's chair. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There has been times where this guy was, over the organization, so to speak, and when he would come to our home, or when he would come to Texas, at that time we lived in Texas, he would come to our home, and he would stay at our home. You know, while he's out scouting the team that was in Texas, their Frisco Rough Riders or whatever.
But, yeah.
So he would come stay at our place. And so he would send, after coming to visit us, whatever, he would, once he got back to Los Angeles or whatever, he put a call in to his people. Now, Jordan's in maybe 9th or 10th grade. So he knows he's a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
All his life. Okay, so an opportunity came around. So when he got back to California or whatever, how about, I don't know what the rules are, but you send this guy equipment in the mail.
Yeah.
Boxes of equipment. And it's all catcher's equipment. Okay, now fast forward, come 2009, when he's the general manager, at that time he wasn't the general manager. He was over in the minor leagues or whatever.
Yeah.
When he was doing those things and coming to visit. So when he gets to become the GM, he finally, I guess the scouts come out and whatever, and they draft him or scout him. Well, they scout him as a catcher. He didn't, his senior year, he didn't even catch. I mean, I'm sorry. He didn't even play the outfield his entire senior year. So now you'd want to draft him. But you draft him as a left fielder, but you know he's a catcher.
They did that on purpose, in my opinion.
That's a huge problem. And the excuse that I got was, well, not just myself. He gave it to Jordan, too. The reason why they were not going to draft him as a catcher was because it was a waste of talent. Am I right, Jordan?
A waste of talent?
Absolutely.
Yes.
A waste of talent?
Yes. Yes, because he was too fast. You got to understand, Jordan's a multi-sport athlete. Track and field, football, If you put give him a lacrosse racket in his hand, he can play lacrosse. He can play any sport. If you give him a ball, he can play it and play it very well. Okay. So my thing is that, but you're going to tell him that he's too, it's a waste of talent. I would think you would want to have a catcher that was, agile, talented, athletic, you know, quick, fast,
who can steal bases.
Right.
And who can also switch hit.
A waste of talent. I am sitting here sitting here speechless right now hearing that. That is,
so how do you think we felt?
That is incredibly stupid of them.
Right. But you got to understand, this person's thinking, the way he drafted, I guess the formula that he used for drafting players was all based off of analytics. And I spoke to someone that's very reputable in the game of baseball, and he basically said the same thing. That's where they're going now. It's about analytics. It's not about the talent.
What happened to drafting? You know what? When sabermetrics was actually introduced as a term, and analytics was introduced as a term to me, I balk at those two words because they don't exist to me. If you're going to draft somebody, you draft them on what you see them doing, period.
Right. Right.
You draft a player on what your instincts tell you after you see them play, period. This is why so many players, and let's take color out of the equation, gentlemen. We spoke about this when we were down in Tennessee. This is why so many players are drafted A, out of position, and B, have short major league careers, if at all, because it's based on numbers and not eyes.
Right.
Right.
Right. You got a point there, Snowman.
It's based on numbers and not eyes.
Right.
You use now, your eyes if you to, were to scout go, everything.
If you were to go to a game and you saw him, you saw Jordan play, all I would do is just sit there and watch and let you be the judge for yourself. I wouldn't even say a word. First thing probably come out of your mouth, Snowman. This guy is big league caliber right now.
And that was the first thing I told you when I saw him warm up.
Right.
That was one of the first things I told you when I saw him warm up. In one of the last games that we had down in Tennessee, Jordan Drake, Earl Drake joining me here on Snowman in the Morning. We're getting ready to close this out here in just a moment because I got more stuff for you, but I want to thank these guys for coming on and telling the story, and believe me, there will be a part two to this.
There will be a part two to this,
and there will be an extended podcast of this. We're just coming up on time right now.
Mm-hmm.
You scout people based on what you see and not numbers. Judge the numbers when they start playing for your club.
Mm-hmm.
Judge the numbers.
And real quick, Snowman, in closing, because I know you're getting ready to wrap this thing up, let's touch on the fact that when you get released and you find yourself trying to find other avenues to play, okay? So in Jordan's case, we hit the winter leagues, you know, the California Winter League out in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
That's number one. Now, mind you, I'm going to say it. And for those of you out there listening, I'm calling it for what it is, okay?
Please do.
It's a baseball Ponzi scheme, okay? I'm going to say that one more time. It's a baseball Ponzi scheme. We all know what Mr. Madoff did. It's the same thing. It's just in baseball. And let me explain. You have 250, 300 kids or young men that are looking to take their careers to the next level. You have a group of individuals who claim that they want to see these kids get a second shot, That's why we're coming up and we're designing these winter leagues to give people a chance to get seen, be signed by an independent team or whatever. Okay? Mm-hmm. But it's going to cost you $3,500 for the month. So you're going to go play over here or in Palm Springs for 30 days, and your goal is to, you know, put up numbers. Well, they turn around and they announce that on this particular day, we're going to have an MLB day. So the MLB scouts are actually coming out to scout and talk to the players. Okay? And then you also have players. Now, everybody's supposed to come in with a clean slate.
Wrong.
Why is it that when we're registering, we're finally getting onto the site where we've arrived, we're getting bags and stuff out of the car, and we're going in to, you know, check in. Well, why is it that we see four or five players sitting at tables
signing contracts?
And they haven't even played yet. They haven't even gotten their rooms yet.
They in regular clothes.
Yes.
Anybody?
Yes. Okay.
Does
now,
the name LeBron?
You got the you go and you play those three games. You play for those 30 days over there. You're playing games every day. You're putting up numbers, and you're putting up pro numbers. You know, you're throwing base runners out. You're stealing bases. You know, you're doing everything, man. You're batting over 300. And you still can't sign an independent contract. But mind you, you're just coming out of an affiliate program, an MLB affiliated program. So you would think once those coaches and scouts that are there at those particular winter leagues, you would think they would say, okay, well, Drake, he's here. He just come out of the Angels organization. Let's work with him while he's here for these 30 days.
Yep.
And let's find out what his deficiencies are so we can try to fast-track him and get him back. You got players signing minor league or independent contracts that hadn't even gotten as far as Jordan had gotten. And as far as being drafted, playing in an affiliate organization with skills to match, but because for whatever reason, you got other players signing contracts that ain't played a game. And then the other thing to that is when they sign out of the winter league, mm-hmm. and when you go to find that they to look for them on that independent league roster, they're nowhere to be found. So Jordan, can you elaborate a little bit on how that works?
Please do.
When they sign,
This will be our final point to close things out, but there will be a second part of this.
Okay.
Yes, this will be the final. This will be the final, and it'll be short. Like you already said, Father, it's a Ponzi scheme. Mm-hmm. They have certain people in place that they want to sign just so they can save face for their company or for their league. Mm-hmm. Okay? They may say that it may be 35 people or so, but that's not the truth. That's not the truth. That 35 people getting signed, that's not real.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how do you play in a championship game? You hit three triples, I think. Well, for that month, you're the triples.
I'm the triples champion.
Yeah, you're the triples hitting champion. Go ahead, Jordan.
Let's just say this. People, whoever's listening, just go online, type in Jordan Drake Baseball. All my information, my stats, where I've played in these winter leagues, it's all there.
Yeah, California, Arizona, and Texas winter leagues. Look those up. You'll see.
And they're all Ponzi schemes. So if there's any ball players who are thinking about going to these leagues, make sure you double check, triple check, quadruple check that this is something that you're okay with doing. Because from my experience and from what I've had on my resume, it still hasn't done anything for me.
I'm looking at this right now.
For somebody that is trying to get into the game, Do your workouts. Work out hard. Be in the gym every day. Hit every day. Make a video. Make a workout video, a highlight video, and put that online. You have a better chance of being signed doing that than spending $35,000 or $3,500 to go and play. That's how much I've almost pretty much spent. I've lost about $10,000, $20,000 worth of money playing in these leagues for the past 7 years.
Yes. So that's where we say it's a Ponzi scheme. You get 300 players coming in, and they're all bringing in $3,500. Do the math.
Yeah.
And then you look at who's getting signed out of there, and you'll see it's just what we're saying it is. It's a Ponzi scheme. And nobody has been called, nobody has called baseball independent or whatever. Nobody has brought this to the light. And I'm, as a father, a very supportive father, I'm a little ticked off that this has gone on this long and no one has called this spade a spade.
We're going to leave it here. Okay. We're going to leave it here. And when we convene again, and we're going to do this very soon, when I put both parts together, we're going to pick up there in why they haven't called this for what it needs to be. His name is One Take.
Alrighty.
Jordan Drake and his father Earl Drake joining me on this special edition of Snowman in the Morning for this special interview, and I want to thank you both for allowing this to happen. And folks, we're putting it out there. If you want to sponsor our podcast or our show, drop an email to snowmaninthemorning@gmail.com. Thank you, gentlemen, very, very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Snowman.
Thank you, Snowman.
The St. Joseph Chargers have built up a basketball tradition unlike any other. Led by legendary head coach Gene Pingitore, the Chargers look to continue that tradition of outstanding basketball in the 2017-2018 season. Already 5-0 and champions of the Ron Johnson Thanksgiving Tournament, the Chargers are now ranked 14th by the Chicago Sun-Times. St. Joseph will put its undefeated record to the test on Friday night in a CCL crossover game at St. Lawrence. The Vikings are also undefeated. Tune into the action live Friday night on Arena Sportsnet Chicago. That's at arenasportsnet.com/ASN Chicago/live. I'm Connor Klingon, and I'll be calling the action all season long on ASN Chicago. Are you ready for another thrilling season of Charger basketball? Don't miss out and tune into ASN Chicago all season long.
I think he's there now. Chris, good morning.
Morning. How you doing, Snowman?
I'm a little amped.
Why not? There's always a reason to be amped up. It's a nice Wednesday morning. We got a lot of sports to do. Got a big college football weekend.
Oh, yeah. In two divisions. But you know why I'm particularly amped, as people heard in the opening.
The good old Giants. They're always good for something.
Yeah. All right, let's get off of that and let's get into this. We're going to start with the FCS. First of all, let's start with the coaching vacancies, or lack thereof, or what the hell happened in Tennessee?
Tennessee is a dumpster fire. That's what happened. And it's amazing that one university, a big university like that, can be run by people on Twitter. I mean, the AD there has shown that he has no idea what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason this is a problem, what coach in their right mind is going to want to go to a university where the AD isn't running? The AD is obviously not running things. People outside, I don't really know how I want to word it, but the outside influences are what's driving. I mean, they hired Greg Schiano and then fired him an hour later because social media blew up. In their right mind, it's going to want to leave their situation. Then they go after Mike Gundy. to try to say, hey, we're going after the right thing. What? I never understood this. I went through this was all day yesterday with Mike Gundy might leave Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy is a record holder at Oklahoma State.
Yep.
What makes you think he's leave there unless you walk in with a bag full of money and just a big bag with a dollar sign on it and put it on the table and say, this is what we're giving you. Like, Mike Gundy was never leaving Oklahoma State.
Mike Gundy's having
it made no.
Mike Gundy's having too much fun.
Exactly. He can do what he can do whatever he wants at Oklahoma State. But Tennessee's a dumpster fire, and I don't see any way any big-name coach is ever going to take that. Like, no one is going to leave their – no one's going to leave their secure job because of what they did to Greg Schiano.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got to go out and get a coordinator, get some coach up on the – you know, some coach on the rise. You know, they got to try to catch a guy before he hits it big. And
yeah.
I don't – see that happening. I mean, they have to go out. They can't get an established guy. It doesn't make any sense. As a coach myself, if I had a secure job, I would not touch Tennessee with a 10-foot pole.
I'm not touching him. I wouldn't.
All right.
Not with all that. You saw what happened to Brett Bielema.
Exactly.
And then
you're, you know, they're going to be paying, they're going to pay somebody a ridiculous amount of money. And then that's going to cause the fans to say, why are we paying all this money to win 7 games? Because mm-hmm. that's what Tennessee is right now.
They're a mediocre team that's in search of an identity. Forget a coach. They're in search of an identity.
I mean, unless they can get somebody like maybe a team. I haven't even seen his name thrown out there, and I don't understand. Why not go after T. Martin? He was a quarterback at Tennessee. You know,
because that
he's an offensive coordinator. He's the offensive coordinator at USC, so obviously he's doing something right because he's got Sam Darnold there. his name hasn't been thrown out there yet. It's probably because it's too logical and makes too much sense.
Thank you. Too much like right. It's too much like right.
Exactly.
Well, I'm tired of talking about coaches. Let's get to some picks, shall we? We're gonna start in the FCS because they're in their round of Sweet 16. But before we go there, why didn't the Division 1A playoff start with 8 teams or do what Division 2 or Division 3 or Division 1 AA did? Why?
Yeah, an 8-team playoff, you know they were going to 4. They went to 4 because they had 0 before.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing they wanted to see how it would play out. And I think now they're thinking, I think eventually we're going to get to 8. I don't know if we'll ever get to 16.
I do think that
the appetite for 8 is rolling.
Yeah.
And you know what they started with the, you know, they had to fight to get to 4. So now
it shouldn't have been a fight in the first place.
When that money, it's all about money.
Yeah.
It's always been about money. And as soon as they can figure out how to make the money work, that's when we'll get to 8. And then it'll amp up for the next thing. But it's all about the money. That's just how it works these days.
Oh, Lordy. Okay. We're going to get to some picks, and we're going to do them right now. Because I went off on that subject on Monday, and if I go off again, it'll be another hour past, and I got another guest coming at 10:05. All right, here we go. Stony Brook and the defending champion, James Madison. What say you?
I say James Madison. They've looked good all year. I don't see a reason why they would run into a trouble with Stony Brook.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the Dukes. Here's a wild card game. Northern Iowa and South Dakota State at Dana J. Dykhouse Stadium in Brookings.
I'm gonna take Northern Iowa for the upset here.
Oh, upset.
You know, anyone who listens to my show knows that we love everything Iowa on my show. So since we can't pick Iowa or Iowa State, I'm gonna stick in Iowa and go with Northern Iowa.
This is a toss-up because you got the two-headed monster of Jake Winicky and Dallas Goddard and Taron Christian throwing to him. It's going to be probably the highest. It's going to be one of the highest scoring games of the weekend. And my buddy Gary is the voice of UNI, so I'm going to roll with you and I'm going to call for the upset. And call for UNI to beat South Dakota State. Now we got a real Donnybrook. South Dakota and North Dakota State. That's San Diego. I wrote that wrong. San Diego and North Dakota State. Do we both agree that the Bison are going to blow them out?
Never pick against the Bison. I've learned that too many times. You can never pick against North Dakota State.
I don't care
where that game is.
It's in the Fargo Dome. Who the hell went to the Fargo Dome?
Never pick against North Dakota State. I don't care who they're playing.
Unless it's either James Madison or South Dakota State, and I saw that South Dakota State game in the Fargo Dome. Well, I should say I listened to it. New Hampshire and Central Arkansas. What say you, sir?
I'm going to stick in my neck of the woods. I'm going to stick with UNH.
So you're going with UNH, huh?
I'm a New England guy.
I can't see
New England pride.
I can't see that purple and gray turf. Although it's a pretty turf. I got to go with New Hampshire. I got to stay there. Now, the Coyotes of South Dakota at Sam Houston State.
I've gone back and forth on this one, but I'm going to take Sam Houston.
This is where we differ. I got to go with South Dakota. Watch them all year, and they've come on a lot lately. I'll go with South Dakota. Kennesaw State and Jacksonville State. I think we both agree in this, but I want to have a confirmation.
I'm going to take Jacksonville State, Ben.
We agree. we agree on this. Furman and Wofford. I would not be able to do this game because my tongue would be so tied up.
I'm gonna take Wofford.
I'll go with Wofford myself. And one more before we come out of the FCS. One of my favorite school names of all time, Weber State and the Thunderbirds of Southern Utah.
I'm gonna take Weber State here. This is an interesting game because these are two teams that are not far away from each other.
And Weber State being out of the Big Sky Conference, I'll roll with them and have them get the road win. So the only one we differ is South Dakota and Sam Houston. You got Sam Houston, I got South Dakota. Why do you think Northern Iowa can pull the upset at South Dakota State?
I saw Northern Iowa play earlier this year. I think they're more tested than South Dakota State. That's always what I look for in
point in
the FCS matches, because I don't really get to see that many of them out here out east.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get a lot of them, but when we do get them, I like to watch them. And I saw Northern Iowa play, obviously against Iowa, and I got to see that. So I think they're a more tested team, and I trust what I saw.
Yeah.
That they could pull it out.
All right. We're going to go with it. We're going to go with it. Okay. Now, to the top 10. in Division I in college football. We'll go from 10, and I'll give you the last four. TCU is at 10. At 9 is Penn State. Ohio State is at 8. Miami is at 7, and I think they're finished. Georgia is at 6. Alabama is at 5. The top four are yours.
The top four. Top four. Four. Number four, Wisconsin. Number three, Oklahoma. Number two, Auburn. And number one, Clemson.
We just may see a repeat because no one talked about Clemson all season long, at least not to this point. They got beat by Syracuse, and they just laid in the cut, and look where they're sitting right now. This is crazy.
Well, I mean, we got to see how they handle Miami. Miami coming back off. I mean, we'll get to that when we do our game picks. But you said Miami's dead. Miami's got everything in front of them.
Miami is dead.
If they can beat Clemson, they're in.
Yeah, there's a big problem with that. I believe that's in Charlotte, North Carolina, isn't it? The ACC championship.
I believe it's back in Charlotte.
It better be back in Charlotte.
They moved the game last year,
which was stupid.
They moved it out of Charlotte because of the whole bathroom fiasco
which was stupid
went on. I believe now that that's settled, I believe they moved it back to Charlotte.
They shouldn't have never moved the damn thing.
I totally agree.
That's another
thing. Never should have been moved in the first place, but.
Yep, it's back in Charlotte.
I think it's back there.
It's back in Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium. I got
it. Yes, it is.
Yep. Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we gave you our top 10. And now we got some more picks, and we're going to start with the ACC championship game, which is Saturday night in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Miami Hurricanes versus the Clemson Tigers, and after that future performance in Pittsburgh, I don't trust Miami in that turnover chain. I'm going with Clemson.
I'm going to go with Clemson as well. I think Miami's typical MO is keep it close, and hope for the fourth quarter. That's not going to work against Clemson. Clemson is too good up front, too good on the defensive line for Rozier to be able to drop back and throw the ball up. So I'm going to take Clemson because of their defense, and Kelly Bryant's able to do enough. And as a load of weapons on the outside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big 12 championship, TCU and Oklahoma. Oh, Lord.
This is Oklahoma. I think,
how bad does it get?
I don't know how bad it's going to get. I mean, I love Gary Patterson.
Yeah.
As a coach.
Yes.
I think, and you give him another shot at Oklahoma, like, it's not going to be like the first game. Gary Patterson's going to come out with something different to start the game. I just don't think they have the horses to ride with Oklahoma, and I think it's going to get ugly late.
It's going to get ugly. You know what? I'll make another call here. Oklahoma hangs 60 on TCU.
The way that offense is going, I would say they would put 60 on anybody. The question is how many times will Oklahoma stop TCU? That's the only issue in the game.
Well, just like Oklahoma State, all OU has to do is stop them one more time that TCU stops OU. That's it.
Exactly. All it takes is one stop.
Yes.
All it takes is one stop, and that's usually what Oklahoma gets. They get that one stop, and then they're good.
All right, the SEC Championship from Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. And I can't wait to go see that place. The Georgia Bulldogs and the Auburn Tigers again. Uh-oh.
I'm going with the dogs in this one. I think the first game was a product of a freshman quarterback on the road. That game, remember, that game was in Jordan-Hare.
Mm-hmm.
And Auburn has played like a different team away from their home field. They've been a different team. I know they're on a roll. I know they waxed Georgia the first time. I think that's going to sit in the craw of Kirby Smart, and Kirby Smart's going to be able to use that to get his players going. And if they again, they got to get that running game going, but I think Jake Fromm will be able to do enough to get Georgia over Auburn.
I say Georgia wins also. If Georgia wins, do you think this catapults them back into the playoff picture?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're playing the number four team. They're at number six right now.
Mm-hmm.
If they get a win over Auburn, the only team that stands in their way is Alabama, and
right.
Alabama doesn't play. And so, and this would be Georgia's only loss of the year. Was to Auburn,
yep.
So this would be able to avenge that loss. So you'd have to X that loss a little bit out.
Yeah.
So you'd look at Georgia as probably the fourth team,
mm-hmm.
if that would happen.
Yeah, I say the same thing. If Georgia wins, they're back in the top four, and I believe after this weekend, the top four will be set.
Obviously after this weekend,
yeah.
Sunday afternoon,
they'll
is when they release the final.
All right.
The final ranking.
Speaking of ranking, a lot on the line for both of these teams, Ohio State and Wisconsin, from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana. Does Wisconsin finish running the table, or does Ohio State throw a monkey wrench in their plans? Chris, you first.
I'm going back and forth on this. I love Urban Meyer. I love everything about Urban Meyer's coaching. I love everything that he does, and he gets his team ready for big games unlike any other coach. But I think the distraction of their defensive coordinator and everything that's gone on and
mm-hmm.
everything that's gone on with Greg Schiano this week, and that big distraction on the defensive side is what is making me pause, because Wisconsin's not a team you can really fool around with as far as the offense is concerned. You can't fool around with them because they're going to come at you. They're going to pound you and do what they do. So that's going to be the test to me, is how does that defense hold up? But I'm going to go with Ohio State in this one.
I'm not. I don't think they'll have enough mentally to survive this horrible, horrible distraction. And like you said, Wisconsin is just going to keep coming at you and keep trying to ground and pound you. I'd hate to do this, but I think this winds up being the final nail in Ohio State's coffin. I'm going to go with Wisconsin to win the Big Ten championship. I'd love to be wrong. I would love to be wrong. But I think Wisconsin's going to ground them into the dirt. Kind of reminds you of what Michigan State did to Iowa a couple of years ago. Here's a game for you. The American Athletic Conference Championship. I nearly said that wrong. Memphis and UCF, and it's all about Mackenzie Milton.
Oh, it's going to be this is going to be the game of the week.
Really?
I'm predicting it right now. This is going to be the game that you want to watch. And the sad thing about this is going to be a fantastic game, just like the South Florida game was probably the game of the week last week, and nobody's talking about it.
We are,
but this game is going to be. I'm going to predict 54-48, somewhere around there. It's going to be high scoring. They're going to be throwing the ball all over the place. I'm going to take UCF to stay undefeated, and And the sad thing is they're going to go undefeated, and they won't even sniff the top 10.
And that pisses me off because Western Michigan did it last year. Western Michigan ran the table and didn't get a sniff of the playoff. That pisses me off, man.
And this, I think UCF is going to be the first ever to go 14-0.
I just wish they had a chance at the playoff, man, because I had a chance to see UCF play live when they annihilated Cincinnati at Nippert Stadium. Mackenzie Milton is the real deal, and y'all listen for that name next year as far as Heisman voting goes. Stanford and USC for the Pac-10 title. Do we really want to pick this game?
Again, this is another revenge game. Stanford got steamrolled by USC the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Love's a little banged up, you know, but now Bryce Love has to make a statement to make himself on the level of Baker Mayfield. He has to try and do something. He has to go off for something like 200 yards, and they have to win. I'm gonna take Stanford in this one.
Me too. Me too. I don't like USC. I don't trust USC. I particularly don't trust Sam Darnold. Not in this situation. I'm taking Stanford. Oh, boy. Michigan hosts a couple of Ohio teams, Akron and Toledo, for the MAC championship. What say you?
I'm going to go with Toledo.
You're going with the Rockets.
The one game I saw of Toledo was when they hung in there with Miami, and I liked what they did. They actually had the lead going into halftime,
mm-hmm.
and then the war of attrition caught up to them. That's not going to be the case when they're playing Akron, because Akron's on their level, and we saw Miami was way above their level.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with Toledo.
I too am rolling with the Rockets, the Mean Green. And the Owls, North Texas and Florida Atlantic for the Conference USA Championship. Chris, you first.
This game makes me feel dirty all over. I think I have to take a shower after I pick this game, and it has nothing to do with the kids on the field. It has to do with the fact that Lane Kiffin is coaching in this game for a championship, and but I'm going to roll with Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin's on fire. And I don't know if you saw his tweets this week. His mm-hmm. tweet game was on point. So I'm going to hope that his coaching game is on point on Saturday.
This is probably the only other game that will differ. I don't trust Lane Kiffin. I simply don't. He's done a great job. All right. He's done an absolutely fantastic job in fixing up Florida Atlantic. Will it stay is the question. And my answer is no. I'm taking the Mean Green, and they put an end to Lane Kiffin. Now, Fresno State and Boise State for the Mountain West title. Will there be enough points in this game?
Well, again, you got another rematch game. Fresno State upset Boise State on the blue turf. So I'm gonna go with
Boise State.
I'm gonna go with Fresno State doing it again.
You think they'll do it twice?
I don't see Boise State being able to turn it right around. And
I'd like to be wrong, but I'll roll with you and take Fresno State as well. Now, when I saw that, folks, Chris sends me the list of games that we're going to talk about on the air. When I saw this one, I started cracking up laughing. And I'm going to make my pick out of pure unadulterated spite, even though one of my best friends is a Florida State fan. Louisiana Monroe and Florida State. And I'll go first on this one. And Chris, I'm going to totally make you laugh with this. This is the end of the Jimbo Fisher era, and he goes out with an L on his forehead. I'm calling the upset at Doak Campbell.
Well, the interesting thing about this game is the only reason why this game is being played on Saturday is because Florida State needs to win this game to become bowl eligible.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game that was canceled earlier in the year.
That's right.
Because of the hurricane.
Right.
This game was canceled. They were not going to play it at all. And then Florida State started to go into their dumpster fire of a season, and they were like, oh, if we don't get that Louisiana Monroe win, we might not make a bowl game. So they put it back on the schedule for net. So that's the only reason this game is relevant, is because if Florida State loses, they don't go to a bowl game. And they've got way too much talent, and Derwin James. This is the game for Derwin James to make some money. He's been talked about as, oh, he's the best defensive back. He's the best defensive back. He was up for the Heisman at the beginning of the season as a safety. And if he can't get his defense ready to play ULM, then he's going to fall very far in a lot of NFL minds. So this is a game for him. I'm going to call him out right now. This is a game Derwin James has to put his state. He has to come out and be, and I know it's the week of Sean Taylor, but he has to have a Sean Taylor-esque game where he's just running around hitting dudes and intercepting maybe two passes.
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
He has to be flying around the field, and he has to take over the game.
He won't.
I'm going to call him out.
I'm calling him out. He won't. He won't. I don't think it's going to happen. If I'm wrong, I'll say it Monday on the show.
Word on the street about your Jimbo Fisher take, word on the street is Jimbo Fisher is thinking about leaving Florida State for Texas A&M.
That's a done deal. Jimbo's out of there, and he's taking an L with him. Watch this. I'm calling him. I'm calling him out. I'm calling him out. I'm calling the defense out. Because the best defensive back's in Iowa. We talked about that 3 weeks ago.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
The best defensive back is in Iowa.
I feel like Derwin James is talent, but it just hasn't shown up. And
Derwin James hasn't shown up all year long, period. Period. And I don't think he'll show up for that. He's going to be too relaxed knowing that they're playing Louisiana Monroe and they're going to burn his ass. They're going to burn his ass. I can't do it.
We'll see.
I can't do it. I can't trust Florida State on that one.
I'm going to go with here's the funny thing. The question is, all right, so Florida State, if Florida State wins this game, they're going to go to what? Like the Meineke Care?
They're going to go to
something or other, like Papa John's Bowl. Like
they're going to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, and play the Belt Bowl.
Are they really going to take that bowl invitation? Like, are they really going to accept that? Hey, this is how we got to a bowl game. Like, for a team like Florida State, I don't see them being like, oh, we'll go play in the Boise, Idaho, like Boise Potato Bowl. Like, come on. You're Florida State. You shouldn't be doing this. You should just be accepting that you didn't make a bowl game and move on.
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
What makes it so bad,
I bet you they take the invitation anyway. If they win. I don't think they'll win.
Look,
I'm calling
them
out.
They have to take the invitation. It's the only reason they put this game on the schedule. Listen. For a bowl game.
I'm calling them out and saying Louisiana Monroe is going to go to Tallahassee. They're going to get paid by Florida State, and then they're going to put a foot in their ass.
Everybody else has that's gone to. They can't win at home, so.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State's had trouble winning at home, so.
Oh boy.
We disagree, but we agree that.
Yep.
I would love to see it. I would love to see it. If it happens, I would love to see it, and it would be great. It would be great for my show because my co-host would absolutely destroy Florida State any chance he gets because he's a Hurricane fan. But
that explains that.
So any shot he can take at Florida State is.
Oh, your co-host is a Miami fan. Your co-host is a Miami fan.
Oh yeah.
Well, he's going to get
disappointed. He's a huge Miami fan.
Well, he's going to get disappointed this Saturday.
We'll see on the show. We'll see on the show tonight. He's not a Miami fan, but he's not a crazy person. So I'll see. He's been known to pick against his Hurricanes for sake of the show. But I will. So we'll see what he does tonight. If he picks Miami and they come in and they lose, then I'm gonna be able to get all. Then I'll be dressed in all orange next week. When he comes in the studio.
If Miami loses to Clemson, I'll call into the show and play the Clemson fight song.
Oh, there we go.
If Clemson obliterates Miami, which I have a feeling they'll do, I will have the Clemson fight song at the ready. I will call in and I will play it, and y'all will know it's me.
That's a done deal. I'll take that deal.
And on top of that, I'm playing the Northwestern fight song also. All right.
Hey, they're going bowl. They'll go to a good enough bowl.
I think Northwestern's going to wind up playing January 1st. I really think that. Now see, here's
at 21. That's a tough draw.
So here's one. Here's one more question, and then I'll get out of here. Then we'll get out of here, and I got another guest coming in 11 minutes. Why is it that a school like Northwestern, that you don't hear anything bad about, gets no kind of love whatsoever? None.
You just answered the question. You don't hear anything about
there you
them.
Go.
You don't hear whether it's good, they always say it. They've said it for years. Any publicity is good publicity. It doesn't matter what they are. It doesn't matter if it's bad publicity. It doesn't matter. Oh, Penn State, you had a big scandal. Well, now you're back in, and somehow you're in the top 10 despite your losses. Ohio State, you've had a bunch of things go against you. Oh, but we'll put you back in because you're a big name and people know who you are.
I hate that.
That's how college football is. But the thing is, we have teams like UCF that we can root for and say, hey, these guys are going to run the table, go undefeated, and still finish maybe in the maybe 10th. If they go undefeated, even if they win their bowl game, after their bowl game, they'll be an undefeated team that is just sniffing the top 10. It doesn't make any sense.
They should be in the frickin' playoff picture, period.
We had that debate on my show last week.
Yep.
My co-host said he would put them at 4 right now.
I'd put them at 2. I'd either put them at 2 or I put them at the top of the pile for a very simple reason. They've beaten everybody in front of them, period.
Realistically, I have UCF at 8 right now. If they win against Memphis and other things happen with the top 4 and one upset happens, I could easily jump them into the playoff. I would be able to easily say that. But realistically, I think they're about 5th or 6th as far as where they are. That's a realistic take as far as watching them. I think they're about 5th or 6th, somewhere in there. And unfortunately, we only have 4 teams. That's the unfortunate thing about college football.
And yet UCF has beaten everybody in front of them, and they won't even sniff the top four. I may have that to talk about tomorrow. Chris Deeps joining me, as always, for our college football chat.
That'll wrap it up. I'll be back on Monday with a full show. Hope you all enjoy the weekend, enjoy some football, and enjoy your family. Just have a great weekend. And I will be back on Monday. Till then, Snowman out.